All right, welcome to the Pop Culture Man Children Podcast, PCMC. I'm PCMC 1. This is PCMC 2. That's Emilio Sparks.
That's Mike Buongiorno.
How are you, sir?
Good.
We're blowing up.
Are we?
Well, we've got like 3 listeners now. I'm super excited.
Go to the iTunes. You can type in PCMC, which is Pop Culture Man Children. Hit the subscribe. Give us a little review. Tell your friends to tell your friends, and then they'll tell their friends to get what our friends, and we can be friends.
Yeah.
That's a Puff Daddy ad lib from a Biggie Smalls record.
See, yeah. This is why you're around.
You think so?
Because you come in with those hot, fresh Puff Daddy references.
You know he's calling himself Brother Love now?
Is he?
Yeah. It was like during his birthday, and he sent out a video tweet thanking everybody for the amount of birthday love he got.
Sure.
But please do not refer to me as Diddy no more. Please refer to me as Brother Love.
But does he know that a lot of us never stop calling him Puffy?
I can't call him anything else but Puffy.
Right.
He'll always be Puffy to me.
Isn't Brother Love who
the
Nutty Professor turns into?
That's Buddy Love.
Oh, that's Buddy Love.
And then there is a former manager of the World Wrestling Federation known as Brother Love, who is played by Bruce Prichard.
Did he only work in that field?
In professional wrestling, yeah. But the character of Brother Love was kind of like this televangelist.
So is he going to file suit against Sean Combs?
Knowing Vince McMahon,
mm-hmm.
The name Brother Love and the intellectual properties.
Trademarked, locked up.
Done.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much Diddy will call himself Brother Love.
All right. For more of this, listen to Wrestle Rap.
Yeah, sure. Click the link. Find us on there.
Let me give you a quick news update, which is Disney has not bought 20th Century Fox yet. Because
they will, though, right?
Well, they're shopping around a little bit. Now Comcast is interested and some other companies interested. I think Disney's going to grab it up anyway. It might just be Rupert Murdoch's way of, like, driving up the price. The sale has not gone through yet. Something's going to happen, though. I think they would at some point they walked away from the table and said Disney's not interested, and then I just read Disney's like, no, we're back in negotiations.
I think they legitimately just want those Marvel characters.
I think that's all they want, because I'm trying to think, what else does 20th Century Fox have
that
in terms
I care
of franchises?
About? Nothing.
But even not what you care about, what in terms of franchises, what do they have? If I was to buy 20th Century Fox today, what am I getting?
Okay, so
besides the X-Men.
Okay, so do you want from 1935 to 99, or do you want from the 2000s?
Let's do 2000s. I don't need the Buck Rogers franchise, although they will reboot that at some point.
So you would get Big Mama's House, Titan A.E., Me, Myself, and Irene.
These are all one-shots.
X-Men.
Okay, that's what I'm buying.
What Lies Beneath.
No.
Digimon the Movie.
So are there no franchises? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. The Legend of Badger Vance. Castaway.
No.
Dude, Where's My Car?
They tried 2 of those, I think.
Monkey Bone.
No. But Frasier. No.
Freddy Got Fingered.
Okay.
Dr. Dolittle 2. Joyride. Shallow Hal.
No.
Joe Somebody.
No.
Kung Pao Entered the Fist.
No.
Ice Age.
Yes, that's a franchise. Okay. That's a thing that Disney would want, Ice Age.
Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones.
All right, no. That was a distribution.
Welcome to Mooseport.
So EA failed with... We couldn't have went off on a better one. Welcome to Mooseport. Let's turn it into a franchise. Let's get Hackman back out of retirement. So EA put out Battlefront 2, the new Star Wars game, and, well, the internet went crazy because something that's been going on with video games, and I'm not a huge video game guy, but something that's going on with video games, especially the EA games, is that they have these like treasure boxes where basically you buy the game and you can't do anything, and then you have to play either a million hours to unlock something or you buy something. And people were like, you've been advertising this game for months and now I'm playing it and I can't be Darth Vader unless I pay you more money.
What I assume most video game companies do.
But Reddit jumped on it, and the Star Wars fan community jumped on it, and it was just one of those things that, you know how the internet is. Sometimes things can happen and they're really no one notices, and then sometimes something hits and then it just blows up online, and it blew up. And for like a little while, they were like, okay, you know, we're going to unlock everything for everybody for a little while. And then I think they went back on that, or they said it was temporary. And supposedly Disney is not happy with EA. Obviously, lots of people like video games, but you're a little kid and you get a game and you want to play your favorite character, Jyn Erso. Even if I wanted that, I would have to pay some money for it.
Have you ever played a Star Wars video game?
I mean,
yes. When was the last time you actually played a video game? That's my question.
Oh, God. Not a mobile game? Because I play mobile games from time to time. Probably that Ghostbusters game that came out a few years ago. I played the Wii version. That was definitely the last game I played.
I don't have enough time, nor do I feel I could invest myself mentally
right
to play them.
We're old now.
And I have no desire to sit there for hours.
Where's the joystick?
That exactly. Would be us. I'd be like, what is this? The last video game console I've played has to be Nintendo 64.
Wow.
I never played a PlayStation.
Never played a Wii?
Never played a Wii.
Never played any PlayStation.
No.
I had the first two PlayStations. I played the Resident Evil games.
The last game that I remember playing vividly was Mario Kart.
Well, you know what? It was a good one to go out on. We've aged out of it, my friend.
Have we crossed that line where yeah. Video games do not attract us?
But I tell you
even
what.
Even as a kid, they never attracted me.
See, though. They attract me. And I think about it. Before this whole debacle happened, I really thought about getting the new Star Wars game and therefore having to get a new system. And I believe, and this is why, don't come to us for your actual news because we don't know anything. I forget who it was, but there's some state where they're actually making it illegal. Whoever it was that was behind this thing said that this is basically gambling aimed at children, and it's morally wrong, and they're not going to allow it anymore in the state. So now you've got the government coming down on EA.
That state, my friend, is Hawaii.
Ah.
A state politician in Hawaii says the new Star Wars game encourages kids to gamble. He wants to ban sales to anybody under 21.
This is not that case, but you've been hearing cases about kids who, like, spend thousands of dollars on microtransactions in the game because they don't realize they're just spending all this money.
Hawaiian House of Representatives member Chris Lee accused EA of predatory behavior. Lee said that the new EA Star Wars game actively encourages kids to engage in gambling.
And that's the dark side.
Oh, that is the dark side.
That's dark-sided.
That's how you start.
Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. Suffering leads to gambling. Yoda said that, except the part with gambling.
The controversial element in the game is a concept called loot boxes, which offers randomized items in exchange for real money.
We're going to sell you Jakku, but if you want to play as Rey, you got to pony it up.
Lee further went on to say that this game is a Star Wars-themed online casino designed to lure kids into spending money. He says, and I quote, "It's a trap."
Imagine we bought Mario 3 and Mario's not in it.
But technically we did kind of gamble, or maybe even the generation before us did when they would go to arcades and they would put tons of money into the coin slots.
But you're not getting anything out of that. Well, I guess they're not getting anything.
What are you really getting?
That's true. You're not really. Maybe gambling isn't the right word that they're using because you don't really have any chance of winning anything. It's just basically a mall for children.
Yeah, but if you're getting those loot boxes, you're spending tons of money on those loot boxes.
Maybe they don't know what's in them.
You don't. It's randomized items from what it says.
Oh, so that's why it's gambling.
In exchange for real money.
That's why it's gambling.
So are you addicted to the fact that you want to go out and spend your money on these boxes? And what happens if you get the same stuff in the box over and over again?
Just like with real loot boxes, like Loot Crate. You go, "Mom, can I use your credit card?" And then you ruin the family. The family doesn't have Christmas this year because of EA. Thanks, EA.
I got friends at EA. Fall back.
Fall back, sir. We will shill when we have to.
Can I tell you one thing before we even get back into the yes. into this?
Yeah.
That coffee
stinks.
It doesn't smell bad, but it's very strong.
That's how I need it.
Can I see that for a minute, please?
Absolutely.
I'm going to stick my nose in your cup. What is in this?
It's just black. No milk, no sugar.
You know I've only had coffee.
I'm sorry. I drink coffee like a gentleman. No milk, no sugar. I don't have time for frivolities.
You know, I've only had coffee maybe for one entire month.
Yes,
and it was only maybe six times in total.
You're such a weirdo.
Why am I a weirdo?
In some ways, you're very normal, but then you'll come out with something like that, and I'll be like, what are you?
Because I have no desire to drink a caffeinated beverage that people dictate, you need this to survive.
Oh, look who's high-roading me now. You going to high-road me?
Let me ask you a question.
Next in the news, people are very upset at the Olaf's Frozen Adventure short that airs before the movie Coco. Disney Pixar movies always have a short film before the major film, and they'll sometimes have really cool, like, new things, like just like a cool idea for a short film. It's sort of a way of capturing the old school, like when you'd go and you'd see like a newsreel and a Bugs Bunny and a Mickey Mouse, and
I miss those.
Right.
Instead, we get these dumb Regal Cinema movies that people make just shilling Coca-Cola and popcorn.
Right. So sometimes it's a new concept, and then sometimes they use well-known characters. So it was Olaf, and that's Olaf, if you don't know, is the talking, singing snowman from Frozen. And the audience at first was excited because Frozen is a great movie. I love Frozen. And most people love – I saw it in a theater full of kids. And most kids love Frozen. And – it was 20 minutes long. It was basically, I turned to my friend and said, we just watched a network TV special that didn't have the ads in it. It had no point. And somehow, though, in 20 minutes, they fit in about 10 terrible songs that were unmemorable. Literally, there's one part where they're talking about, like, what should our Christmas tradition be? And then, like, somehow, like, Olaf is a snowman. So you think, oh, maybe they're going to do a little reprise of Do You Want to Build a Snowman? One of the more famous songs from the movie. I was wrong in that assumption. They did not. Instead, they sang, I don't know, Let's Go Weave a Basket. It was just like awful. The songs were terrible. The story was terrible. Even the little kids were like, when is Coco going to start? I hate this. Like, literally, some theaters started doing special screenings of Coco where you don't have to watch Frozen.
Really?
They were like, you can come in and we won't handcuff you. Because basically you go in and then they handcuff you to a chair and you have to watch whatever they tell you.
All right, so you sat through this just to see Coco, and you weren't happy about it. Now, was Coco vindicating because you sat through the 20 minutes of Frozen?
I mean, Coco was good, but was it worth Olaf's Adventure? No, honestly. If I'd known how bad Olaf's Adventure is, I would just be like, you know what? I'm going to wait for Coco on Netflix.
So now, will Disney and Pixar change what they do next time?
No, I think that
they'll... Or are we going to get Olaf's Revenge?
Well, I think that they'll learn that just using characters we love isn't enough. Keep it at 10 minutes maximum and give us something clever.
The idea of Disney and movies and songs is just absolutely pitiful. It's a old, tired formula, which still works, but then you see a movie like Olaf's Revenge. They're shoehorning in 10 songs in 20 minutes. So
it felt like 10. It could have been 3, but they were terrible.
What that shows me... Yes. Is that it's more about we just want the song so people can buy the MP3 on iTunes.
Right. But Olaf's Revenge, Frozen: Olaf's Revenge, is not Frozen. The feature film Frozen is pretty sweet.
Yeah, but it's centered around those songs.
Yeah, but the songs in the movie, the real movie, are good.
Yeah, I get it. But the song...
Build a Snowman's good. Frozen is, yeah, you know...
But the songs emphasize the importance of the film, because if the songs weren't like Circle of Life,
yeah,
or Colors of the Wind,
yeah,
the movies would be good, but I don't think they would be as great, because then you hear the songs on the radio and they're like, oh, I have to go take the kids to see the movie.
I do not understand your point at all. That's like saying I'm eating a banana split and this banana split would be less good if there wasn't chocolate sauce on it. It's like, yeah, but there is, because that's how you make a banana split.
All I'm saying...
Disney movies are musicals.
All I'm saying is that they exploit certain things.
They exploit? What are you talking about?
What do you mean? They don't, you don't think that... Okay, so All Lost Revenge wasn't exploiting the fact that they were trying to parade around new songs so parents could buy them on iTunes for their kids?
Yes. Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. It's not about the storyline. It's not about the continuing arc.
But what I'm saying is there's
what it happens here is that they're trying to get you, Mike Bongiorno, to buy an MP3 of iTunes.
We're the pop culture man children. We know that this is... What we're talking about is always industries.
The days of Randy Newman are long gone, my friend.
Oh, you think Toy Story wasn't about selling toys?
The songs weren't emphasized. I think
the
now
songs,
the
songs. Of course.
I don't
you
think
You got
they
a
would...
friend in me won an Oscar.
It did.
I'm ending this. And the last piece of news, this absurdity. I've never been so angry during the news segment. This last piece of news, the Infinity War trailer dropped.
Whoa.
And
take my money now.
I absolutely loved it, but of course, some people got upset.
The neckbeards.
They were like, he's not purpley enough.
That's all the neckbeards that I follow on Twitter were saying.
And look, I thought the memes were funny where they were like making him look like a California Raisin, or they were saying that his chin looks like a ball sack. But look, you've got a great actor. Brolin is a great actor.
He kills everything.
Right. And you want to see his eyes. You want to see his muscles in his face. Yes, Thanos looked more comic book-y in, you know, when we saw him in the teaser scene of the first Avengers.
Yeah.
First of all, let me say this. I think that, remember the whole internet...
He will be purple.
Yeah, remember the internet thing about the dress? Was it gold and white or was it blue and brown? I think a little bit of it's that, because I think in the scene that everyone's bitching him out, he's in this direct sunlight, so he looks very pink. I bet that he just looks like that in that scene. I might be wrong. I would... tell you that in other scenes with different lighting, he probably looks more purple.
I guarantee you when he gets the rest of the Infinity Stones, his color will come back.
Well, you think he's like the Grimace and he's losing his magic powers?
I think something has to do with that, yeah. I think maybe they play it into that.
Weren't the neckbeards just super upset about Steppenwolf and how he looked too much like a video game character and why didn't he look like a person? This is the opposite of that.
He looks real.
Right. So it's just like you're damned if you do, if you're damned if you don't.
When he's walking and you see the look he's giving and it's a real angry grimace, you see like fibers in his cheek.
Right.
Let me tell you something. Brolin played it like a badass.
Yeah. I mean, do you want Thanos to just be a CGI character and he looks exactly like he does in the comics?
I want him to be scary.
You want him to be a performance. And we do this too. That's what this whole podcast is about. But some people just want to like shit on things and it's like...
Well, nobody's ever happy with anything. You can never go away from a trailer or from a movie or from reading a newspaper article and thinking, wow... this was amazing. No, people want to complain because I think that's what society today dictates.
Well, look, I think...
I was hyped for the trailer.
Part of just being in a fan community is, you know, it's sort of an act of criticism in itself. So I get that. But I also don't get, like, crying in your milk over it. I don't look at a trailer and go, I don't like the way this guy looks. Let's move on from the Thanos and just talk about the trailer. Because I think the trailer looks awesome. I loved it. I loved the slow, melodic... theme. Da, 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 da.
And they
I'm excited
really,
about it.
And they didn't really give away anything either.
No. You see some Spidey sense in it, which there wasn't really any Spidey sense in Homecoming.
Well, which I like because, you know, they explain that he's still getting his powers and he's developing his powers. And the reason why he wears, like, the special lenses within the mask is because he can't process certain things that he goes in. It's too crazy.
Well, I don't feel it's a continuity
for
era.
Him. No, I think it's great. They're going to invest in Tom Holland to play Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And every movie that he's in or every scene that he's in or whatever Spider-Man movie that we're going to get, I think we're going to see something different that we normally haven't seen him develop. So I think we're going to see the spider sense now.
Right. I know the director of Homecoming said that he felt Sam Raimi leaned on the spider sense a little too much in his trilogy.
Because it was cool to see.
Right, it was cool. Here's my question to you. At the end of the trailer, and this is, I'm not going to do a spoiler alert for a fucking trailer. I'm just telling you that now. So at the end of the trailer, we see Thor turn around and goes, who the hell are you guys? And it's the Guardians of the Galaxy. Because we know Infinity War is two movies. Do you think that means that the Guardians are not really in this one and they'll be in the next one? Or am I just sort of reading into that?
I think you're reading into it.
Because you don't see them in any other scenes. Like when you see all the battle scenes and stuff, they're not there.
unless they come like halfway through the movie and they just didn't show anything from the final act.
Hmm.
Because you don't see Thor in those scenes either.
Yeah, I think you see them in the second movie. Isn't he supposed to smash on the windshield?
Thanos' ship was the stinger scene in Ragnarok. So that's where he is. But then, wait, why is the Hulk back on Earth?
That's what I'm saying. Like, something, I don't know. Like this, listen, and this is why these movies, I think, do it so well. And they always have a nice, pretty little bow on top because they wrap up certain things in other movies. I want to know what the stinger scene for Black Panther is going to be.
Black Panther is the last one before Infinity.
Yeah, so that's what I'm
saying. So it might be something directly going into it.
That's what I think it has to be.
I'm excited. I know a lot of people are on Marvel fatigue, and I understand that.
I'm really not.
But, you know, the way I think of it is, and we're not that old that we remember these days, but way back, you know, in the 30s and 40s, you had serials, like Saturday morning serials, where you'd go and you'd see things almost like a TV show. You'd see them continue. And I feel like now with the gigantic media conglomerates and having all of this intellectual property, that's come back. You know, every year you get three major, huge episodes of the Marvel show, and I'm down with it.
And what I'm excited for is to see how they tell this story without certain characters from the Infinity Gauntlet comic book.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the problem they always have, which is how do you change the timeline around?
Now, I heard a rumor on neckbeard.com that they're going to kill off a couple of people.
I think you have to.
Who do you kill off, though? Downey is the face of that franchise.
But that would make him the perfect person to kill off, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. But does it hurt the franchise?
No, because I think, obviously, there's still going to be Marvel movies. But I think we kind of go back to, like, one again, you know, back to one. And we are going to have, like, okay, we'll have Tom Holland still, but we'll build. And we'll have, remember, because in the comic, the Avengers have had so many different lineups. So I think this version of these people might go away.
See, but I think Downey's an important force.
You know what, though? I think you're selling the Chris's short. People love them.
I love the Chris's. I don't think they have the same cachet as Robert Downey.
No, but I could see Downey also being done. Like, literally being like, I'm not doing this anymore.
I think he wants to do other movies now.
I think he's made his vast fortune off of this, and he's ready to
go. So what do you think? He's going to do a lot of independent films after this, do you think? If they kill him off.
He's got enough money now for the rest of his life and other people's lives.
Yeah. I'm curious to see where it goes. I think what we should do is revisit the comic book Infinity Gauntlet as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So we should do that.
Let's take a break.
Okay.
And when we come back, we're going to give you that This Is Us conversation.
Ooh,
that,
yes.
That the fan has been dying for.
All right. And I'm going to light a candle because this coffee is really strong.
And we'll just want to get into This Is Us mood.
On February 20th, meet the people of Mooseport. The plumber.
I'm running for the mayor of Mooseport.
The ex-president.
I'm running for mayor against the man installing my toilet.
The ex-wife.
Come on, I know you're there.
The girlfriend.
You really actually like this guy? Well, then why are you wearing black underwear?
What difference does it make?
It's an unconscious indicator of your subconscious intentions.
Welcome to Mooseport, rated PG-13, February 20th.
And we're back. Welcome to PCMC. Follow us on Instagram. Tweet at Emilio, at Emilio Sparks.
I'm still trying to get you a Twitter account.
No, thank you, sir. No, thank you, sir. Subscribe to us on iTunes.
That would be nice.
Give us 5 stars. Give us a little review ski.
It would be nice.
Yeah, be like, hey, I like these guys.
I like you. I drink coffee, too.
Yeah.
You know what we should do?
What?
We should give some stickers away to some people.
Okay.
Well, we need to know you're alive. That's number one.
Yes.
So we know that it's just not me and Mike talking to each other in my bedroom.
Yes.
Just for the sake of us not being lonely.
Yes.
If you guys are out there.
Now I feel like we're in this dystopian movie where we're on a ham radio. Like, if anybody's out there,
we have
please
contact me.
We have stickers. Please. The walkers are all outside. We're running out of food. Please, we have vinyl stickers for our podcast.
If you want our vinyl stickers to use as trade in this new dystopian society, we're going to give you a couple. Big shout out to Chris Sorrentino, who did the artwork. You can listen to his podcast called the Super Live Adventure Podcast. They have an Instagram.
Slap.
It's called Slap Podcast. SLAPODCAST.
Funny guys.
Really
like
good
them.
Guys, man. So give them a lot of love, Ski. Give us some love. Just make it one big Buongiorno love fest.
Yeah.
Speaking of love fests.
Yes.
This is us.
This is us.
They don't have a theme song like that.
Oh, I sing it, though. I added it
in. You made out your own words?
You know, like that. It's got a little like, dun, 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 yeah. dun. I go, now it's time for us.
When I get excited about the show, mm-hmm. I say, I'm about to watch Jack.
So Jack is really your guy.
Oh, yeah.
Question, what age period Jack is your favorite Jack?
Any Jack across the board is going to be a fantastic Jack.
Even like I'm in a robe, I'm yelling at you because you're mean to the coach who's trying to scout you, Jack. Excuse me, our son seems to have forgotten his manners. His mouth gets more crooked when he's angry.
He does.
But he's got that like fake gray hair that real people don't. Their gray hair doesn't look like that.
Yeah. Well, here's why I like that Jack.
Yeah.
He is addressing his alcoholism.
Yeah, he's doing the steps, baby.
And he is still trying to hold his family together.
Yes.
He has the support of a good woman. But you can tell that he's had some stumbles.
Miguel hasn't come in yet.
No, well, Miguel really doesn't come in.
I know. Miguel waits till long after he's dead, but still I don't like it.
Miguel waits about 20 years.
He waits for Facebook to be invented to find Rebecca.
Yeah, pretty much. And
still, I don't trust him.
I don't like
him. When I see scenes with Miguel and Jack, I'm like, Jack, don't trust him. He's going to stab you in the back.
He's going to slide in her DMs.
You don't even know what a DM is, Jack.
Not yet, Jack.
It hasn't even been invented yet.
Miguel. But the Jack that I like is when him and Rebecca are literally new parents.
Yeah, cool 70s beard, Jack.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I like that,
yeah,
Jack.
Like
I'm smoking Jack. In a hospital, Jack.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I'm
that's a cool Jack.
Smoking cigarettes in a hospital as Major Dad is telling me about my kids.
Yes, Major Dad.
Simon and Simon.
Excuse me, Dr. Major Dad, tell me about my children. One of them died. Did you catch in the last episode, spoiler alerts, by the way, spoiler alerts for everything with This Is Us up to this point. And we're at the season 2 mid-season break now.
Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do.
So rewatch them. That's what I've been doing.
Ooh, you know what? I should do a binge. This Is Binge.
Yeah, This Is Binge. So I was rewatching the episode number 2 from the number 1, number 2, number 3 trilogy. And where Kate loses the baby and Rebecca comes over and Rebecca says, I never got to hold Kyle. And I was like, oh, okay, Kyle was the name. And then I went, wait, they were going to be called Kyle, Kate, and Kevin? That's awful. I'm glad that fictional kid died. That's terrible.
Well, the funny part
is. But their names are Rebecca and Jack, so where's the K coming from?
I guess they just wanted the twin thing.
It would have been KKK.
Well, they wanted a uniformality with that. But then they were gonna name Randall Kyle.
Yes.
But then Rebecca said he just didn't feel like a Kyle.
He's a Randall.
In
episode, this is us getting into it.
Episode of the Big Three, the Randall episode.
Number 3.
The scene when they're talking in front of the Washington Monument.
Yes.
To me, shows how good of a father he is. He tells Randall about Vietnam.
Right, and his mystery brother.
And he lost his way, and how he'll find his way. And he says, Randall, you're smart. You're a great kid. Every decision that you're going to make is going to be a good decision.
Right.
And, you know, you're finding yourself now, so it's okay if you stumble a little bit.
So, and that ties into, because I just rewatched the whole trilogy,
yeah.
That ties into number 1, Kevin's episode, because the pendant that Jack gives Kevin is, he got it in Vietnam.
Yeah, he did.
And he said it's like a Buddhist symbol that means purpose. See, this is what annoys me with This Is Us, because it's like, all right, we never knew he was in Vietnam before, we never knew there was a brother before. I feel like they...
Well, no, see, they foreshadow certain things, like there was a photo. Then there was a scene where Jack's dad
is drunk driving in the old pickup truck.
Driving in the old truck. He goes and has a couple of drinks at a bar where they're about to go fishing. And then you look back and you see Jack and his brother with the glasses. Everything's told in a
foreshadow. But he never told Rebecca about his brother?
Maybe it's too painful. Maybe he feels guilty. Maybe the death is on his shoulders. One of the strongest things about Jack specifically is that he's aloof. You really don't know him outside of being the
dad. I wouldn't use the word aloof. No, I get what you're saying. I don't think aloof to me is a little bit more frivolous. I think that he is stoic. I think he's a man who keeps his problems to himself. He keeps his pain to himself, even away from his wife and kids. That's how I see him.
Like every stereotypical dad from that era.
Right, like...
Like our dads.
Yeah, like you're like being part of being a man is suffering in silence.
So you're saying stoic.
Yeah.
Stoic how? Because when I think of stoic, or the, even in the context
he's
of
like
how
a statue.
I don't think so.
Well, he's trying hard to not be like his dad. It's one of those situations. I mean, both of them are.
See, now that's a stoic father.
Right, and that's a thing I think of that generation, which is... That generation tried to be different parents from the ones before it.
Okay, so what do you want to do? Do you want to go in order of the big three, or do we jump around?
Which is your favorite of the three?
I like the Randall episode.
That's your favorite?
Yes. Out of the three?
Yeah.
Yes.
Why?
Because I like the dynamic with Deja where he finally reached her.
I got a little annoyed at his attitude towards Deja's mom. Like, I know she wasn't a great mom. I know that there was a guy in the house that was abusive, and that's why Deja... You know, would flinch around Randall. But at the same time, part of me was like, why are you being such a snob, Randall? Like,
because it
like, yeah, you're rich. Great. Good for you. But you're not.
It has nothing to do with opulence. What it comes down to
he says to her, though, when Deja says, all my friends are going to make fun of me for this project, he goes, well, the joke's on them because doing good in schools will get you the big house.
I don't disagree with that, though.
Grown up Randall is my least favorite Randall.
No, you're bugging. I think grown-up Randall, kid Randall, baby Randall, like every Randall is a good Randall.
No, kid Randall I like. He's just got anxiety like me when I was a kid. He's just like, no, we can't trick-or-treat outside of the map. And teenage Randall, I like him. I like him going to Howard and hanging out and playing Pac-Man. And I've got a lot to say about Pac-Man. But grown-up Randall annoys me.
Nah.
With his corny jokes and his like...
But that's
holier-than-thou attitude.
That's the whole Randall, though. That's the genesis of Randall, though.
I love William, but the way that he tried to connect with William so hard, I felt like, you already had Jack. You already had the best dad ever.
Yeah, but how would you feel if somebody that you were searching for forever doesn't exist in your life, and then randomly you find him, and you only are allowed a few months with him?
First of all, let me say that I'm not adopted, so I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But just going through the show, as a fan of this fictional show...
And I could tell the anger towards Deja's mother stems from William being absent in his life.
But see, that doesn't make sense because he got mad at Rebecca last Thanksgiving for keeping William from him, right? And now that's exactly what he wants to do. He feels like, oh, I don't want Deja to see her mother because we're better than them.
I don't see
that. And I think that's what the arc of the episode is. I think that's why at the end of the episode, he realizes we got to let her go.
Because he got to spend that time with his father. But you could also tell that there was anger towards that because he was not around.
He had anger at William in the very beginning. But I think very soon that turned into something else. And then the anger for most of season one was towards his mother for keeping him away.
Yes. But that's what they touched upon in the episode where even William said it in that. First off, every time we get a William flashback,
I love William.
It's like Christmas every time. And he said it. He goes, I might have been too over anxious and didn't play it cool enough where maybe if I did, she wouldn't have left.
His heart's in the right place. And I like his wife.
You just don't like the fact that he comes off a bit
snobby. He seems
snobby.
Yeah, he seems snobby. Yeah, he does seem snobby. My favorite of the trilogy is probably Kevin's. Even though he's...
The weakest character in the entire series.
Yeah, he's not my favorite character. Kate's probably my favorite of the big three. Kevin annoys me, but I like watching him. Kevin is just sort of like a shitty character. And I know he's supposed to be a shitty character, so I shouldn't take it out on him. But Kevin's like downslide is...
It's really a lame downslide, though.
It's
that typical Hollywood. I'm gonna do
right,
drugs
like
and drugs.
Right, like you're like living in a 4-star hotel for a week, and I'm like, I don't know if I could pity you. I'm sorry, everybody wants to have sex with you. I'm sorry, your friends with Sly Stallone.
Yeah, I'm sorry,
life's so hard.
I'm sorry, you just did a movie with Ron Howard.
Actually, I think this scene is in all three episodes when it's I like to call them the medium age kids. It's the medium age kids, and they're all. It's that Friday night. And Randall says to Kevin, sorry, I can't go to your football game tonight. And Kevin goes, don't worry, I'll have plenty of fans rooting for me in the stands. And then Jack goes,
very douchey.
Yeah, then Jack goes, nice attitude adjustment. I'm glad that talk we had worked out. I totally am like, that's the way I kind of always feel about Kevin.
He's a douchebag.
Yeah.
You get douche chills. So why was the Kevin episode to you the strongest episode?
Well, I think in terms of it being a bottle episode, it worked the most. It's really just he's in his hotel room, he goes to this high school, he goes back home, and it's all of that. And it works as just like this one little period of time where he meets this girl they went to high school with, and she basically takes advantage of him.
Yeah, she
even
does.
Though she's like a surgeon who helps children who have been burned, she sees him as weak and goes, this is my chance to get this high school ass that I've always wanted. And as much as he annoys me, I feel for him at the end when he's really crying and bawling because also it's not just that he broke down. It's that he has always been like, let's not dwell on Jack. Let's move on with our lives. Like, he never understood why Kate keeps the ashes and stuff. And you see for the first time when he loses that pendant that he really is like, no, this is the only thing my dad gave me. If my dad could see me now, he'd be disappointed in me, and I can't believe I don't have it. I'm still angry that he, like, broke up with Sophie out of nowhere.
Yeah, me too.
I hope that he gets better. But at the same time, I'm like, Sophie deserves better than you.
Well, here's how I see it. And I think it comes down to the idea of finality, where you have this essentially perfect woman that you could really gel and have a good life with.
But how many times could you fuck her over and then come back and say, I'm sorry.
I don't think she comes back from this. I don't. And if
he
she does,
got a second chance.
And he had a good second chance with
it,
too.
Yeah, and he fucked it up.
Big time, because he's a piece of shit. She's a nurse, and she's good looking.
You know, they had the perfect, 1950s style, sweetheart romance. He was the quarterback. She was the
cheerleader.
Yeah. I like when they show him walking through the high school, and he's thinking about his high school days, and he's wearing the Letterman jacket, and she runs up to him and hugs him.
Nice slow motion pan. Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, wait, I'm a fucking loser now.
In that episode, what I prefer is the scene on the football field where he's saying how he gets rewarded for being an asshole.
Right.
That's
right.
A really good scene.
What do you think about episode two, Kate's episode?
The only thing that aggravated me about that was the fact that they throw away the shower curtain, and then at the end bring the shower curtain back in from the trash.
Skeevy.
That's what I thought. It was totally skeevy.
Yeah, that hurt. That tickled my OCD as well. I was like, oh, guys, buy a new one.
I understand the symbolism of it.
Let me tell you something, though. Chrissy Metz, I think, is
she's great.
The best performance on the show.
She's so good.
She's a really good actress.
So good.
Yeah, she's of the adult three. Well, actually, Sterling Brown
Sterling
is kind of amazing, too.
You don't beat him.
Did you see him as Christopher Darden on the OJ show?
Yeah.
He's amazing.
No, he is.
But still, her performance is outstanding. Maybe her and Mandy Moore. Has there been an Emmys yet with the show? I don't follow the Emmys that much.
Yeah, Sterling K. Brown won an Emmy Award for Lead Actor in a Series for Randall.
For Randall, yeah. Okay.
And it was great. His speech was great.
I didn't see that.
He's so good.
I gotta YouTube that later.
Our going to break will be part of his speech.
Okay, I'm down with that. All right, let me ask you a question, and this is a divisive question.
Ooh.
What are your feelings about Toby?
She tries too hard.
Too much, right?
Yeah. Like, I can understand why she feels so suffocated sometimes with him.
Yeah.
He makes these big moments, man.
Like, out of everything.
Yeah, like, oh my god, we took shits today. Let's hug.
Yeah, let's do a dance about
it.
Yeah,
like,
he's too shticky.
What I liked about him was when he goes to whatever their version of UPS is.
Yeah.
And he goes, I'm a big, angry man.
You like that?
That was the button. It was turned off. And
see, but then he was being mean, though. I was like, why are you threatening this guy? This guy is just doing his job.
He was concerned about his woman and making sure she didn't have a fucking breakdown.
I understand.
When they see that little
Swedish, but you don't go up to fake thing. UPS and start threatening people with physical violence. You don't do that, Tobe.
But the guy was having no part of it at first. He was just like, I can't help you.
Eventually the guy helps him.
Well, he had no choice. Yeah. He had to.
And then he gives the guy the Swedish baby bath. Because
he understood what happened. He was like, okay, you know what? Let me fall back.
Yeah.
And let me help.
Let me completely break protocol and let this man into this warehouse so he can look at... That's got to be some sort of a federal law being broken.
In fake UPS world, maybe
not. Yeah.
But that shows that he finally had an off button.
Yeah, but even that, I don't think he's off. I think that's just he's on a different mode of I'm not funny guy now, now I'm angry guy. I want to see Toby just like chill. Like
what, reading the paper?
Yeah. Just relax. Just relax for a second, Tobe.
I don't think Tobe is going to do that. I don't think it's in his DNA.
Even his shirts. It's like he's becoming Cam from Modern Family. Like, what is happening to this character?
Like, I could see that. But I thought that where he was at fake UPS really gives us an idea like, okay, you know, there is a little bit more to him than just a happy-go-lucky chubby guy.
With dramas, you can't help but talk about them like they're real people in your lives. So we talk about them like, oh, I hate that Kevin did this. I hate that Toby did this. But that, those are fictional people. But see, we love the performers.
I think the emotional connection you have to these characters is you don't look at Sterling K. Brown as Sterling K. Brown. You look at him as Randall.
Oh, well, let me tell you something.
You're looking at Mandy Moore as Rebecca.
Right. Let me tell you something. I could talk shit about Toby all day. If Toby died of a heart attack in the next episode, I'd be crying for days.
Be crushed.
I would not be able to go out of the house.
No.
My loved ones would have to go to the UPS to stop the shipment of the Toby action figure I ordered off of Etsy. If there were This Is Us action figures, you know I'd be collecting them.
I would have to get all three Jacks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there'd be one for every wave of the figures would be a different time period. And then there'd be like one that's hard to get. Like, oh, you can't get 70s Rebecca. She's the hardest one to get. She's like a Chase figure. Funko, get on this.
Funko, we need a This Is Us vinyl pop collection.
That'll happen. That's going to happen, I feel. I believe Sterling K. Brown actually said in an interview that within the next 8 episodes, basically within the rest of season 2, we will see Jack die.
I don't know if I'm ready for this.
For a long time, it looked like that was never going to happen. And even when he does die, that doesn't mean he's off the show. Because this show, no one dies. It's reliving.
And they said that, though. The producers told Milo, don't worry.
Yeah.
You're in.
Yeah, yeah. You're going to be in.
As long as this show goes, you're in.
But we are going to get the answer to that sort of central question. And I guess my question to you is, two-pronged question. How do you think he's going to die? And do you think it's going to be worth it? And I know you answered in the last episode how you think he's going to die, because you said you think it's going to be an electrical fire because the house burned down and we see the power go out. Now that I've rewatched the trilogy, I think that the main reason for that power outage is to have like a keystone so you can see exactly how each of the three episodes thread together. Like that moment of the lights going out, that's the moment where you could just sort of, you could put them together. You know what I'm saying?
But I still think that has a huge...
You still think that's...
Oh, yeah.
But, mm-hmm. So...
It has to be an electrical fire. What if the house burns down? How else is it going to burn down? They have
things
shown...
Things can happen.
But they have shown...
There could be a gas fire. It could be someone smoking something. Well, Kate thinks it's her fault. Maybe Kate's having a little jointy.
You think she's smoking...
Maybe medium Kate's having a jointy in the bathroom.
You think so?
And they're supposed to go out to the Dairy Queen. And Jack goes, I'm so angry at you, I can't go out. And they go out without her. And then Jack dies. And that's why she's got the ice cream addiction.
Wow, if they somehow shoehorn in a Dairy Queen, you're not
product integration.
You're a Nostradamus, man.
I know.
I'm going to go with the electrical fire, though. I think something happens.
Would that be satisfying to you? This is the reason I ask. It's almost like Rey's parents in the new Star Wars. When you make such a big deal about something...
I don't think it's ever going to be that gratifying. I think in our heads, we make it like that.
I'm going to disagree with you. I don't know.
So you think it has to deal with medium Kate smoking weed in the house, and somehow the joint just stays lit?
No, that's just a bit.
Oh, okay.
I think... What I genuinely think is, and I'm not taking anything away from the character, I genuinely think that he'll have a relapse, and it'll have something to do with a relapse. Maybe he'll get drunk, and he'll be like trying to cook waffles or something. What does it mean when Kate says it's my fault? That could be taken in so many ways.
Well, maybe she yells at him.
Well, yeah, and maybe that makes him stress out and go, all right, I can't do it today. I'm going to have a drink. Jack is this great character, but he's got this flaw, and I think the flaw should be, you know.
His downfall?
Yeah. The show is like this interesting show. It's almost like, in some ways, it's like Doctor Who in the way that it deals with like time and how when one thing happens, it trickles and it touches another thing.
It's a big ball of timey-wimey.
Right. It's a big ball of timey-wimey stuff. So I think his alcoholism, it has to reverberate. And I think in one way it's reverberating through Kevin's addiction.
Yes.
What happened to Louis the dog? We see Louis the dog pee himself in this episode. Does Louis also burn?
I think Louis burns in the fire.
Oh, God. That would make it even more sad to me.
It has to be. It has to just be as sad as possible. Like, just, you have to bring on tons of feels for Jack's passing.
What if Kate's leaving the house and some man, she's in the house with Jack, right? They're just the two of them. The others are out doing something. And a man comes and knocks on the door and she doesn't know who the man is. And he goes, "Can I come in?" And she goes, "I don't know you." And he goes, "I'm your uncle." And she goes, "Dad, who's this uncle I never heard of?" And she leaves, okay? And then the uncle comes in, and Jack's like, "I thought you died." And he's like, "No, I didn't die. I've actually been part of a secret government experiment program. Flame on." And then he becomes the human torch. Wow. And burns the house down. And he's like, You could be Mr. Fantastic. And Jack's like, "No, I got a family here. I gotta raise my kids." The flame on gets out of control, and that's what happens.
I'm done.
It would be Kate's fault.
I'm done. We're taking a break. I'm done.
We're done?
I'm done.
Wow, you're walking out on that one. All right, I guess. All right. We'll see you after the break.
And the Emmy goes to Sterling K. Brown. This is awesome.
This is the second Emmy win and second nomination for Sterling K. Brown. He credits NYPD Blue as the TV series that inspired him to become an actor.
Thank you. Before anything like this happened for your boy, I was a fan. First, last, and always a fan. So, my fellow nominees, I'm a fan. I love y'all. This one right here, when I think about it, like Walter White held this joint. Dick Whitman held this joint. I may have lost some of y'all, but you know, Google it. And 19 years ago, Detective Frank Pemberton held this joint, as impeccably played by Andre Brower. I just want to say, Mr. Brower, whether it is at Stanford University or on this Emmy stage, it is my supreme honor to follow in your footsteps. I want to thank Bob Greenblatt, Jennifer Salke, to NBC for your support from the beginning. I want to thank Dana Walden, Gary Newman, and everyone at 20th Century Fox for keeping your brother gainfully employed. Appreciate that. I want to thank my cast. Milo, Mandy, Justin, Chrissy, you are the best white TV family that a brother has ever had. Better than Mr. Drummond, better than them white folks that raised Webster. I love you. Susan Kelechi Watson, it is my pleasure to rep black love with you, sister. Let's keep doing it like Martin and Gina. Ron Cephas Jones, you just have to show up and the work is already there, brother. Thank you so much for embodying the presence, which is never an absence. I love you. Our writers, you are our life's blood. You can play. You can play. You can play. I didn't get that loud. Nobody got that loud music. Writers, I love you. You are our life's blood. Our producers and directors, I love you. I'm good.
This is Pop Culture Man Children. We hope you're enjoying this one because we're having a good time sitting here just talking today, boy. Let me tell you.
PCMC.
With ES and MB. For more information on who we are and what we do, please go to our Instagram page, at Pop Culture Man Children. If you are a fan of ours and you want our pop vinyl stickers, DM us,
yeah.
Slide in the DM, and be like, "Hey, I want one." You can also follow me.
You can pull a Miguel and slide into our DMs like he slid into Rebecca's heart.
Let's do it.
And if you don't live too far away, we'll send it to you.
Yeah, maybe.
Nothing in international waters.
You know, know, what I'll do is I'll write a little letter, but it'll be Mandy Moore lyrics.
She was a pop star once upon a time.
Yes, she was.
Well, we're in our
favorite part of...
Yes, it is our current obsessions. So rock, paper, scissors, let's see who goes first.
Let's do it.
Rock, paper, scissors, say shoot. We both did paper. Rock, paper, scissors, say shoot. I did scissor, he did rock. My friend,
okay.
The floor is yours.
I have been obsessed. It's a series on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the first season, and I'm in the middle of the second season.
Yes.
It is the Jason Momoa vehicle.
Of course.
Frontier.
What is it about?
Frontier is an American Netflix series that follows Declan Harp, which is Jason Momoa.
That's such a movie name, Declan Harp.
He's part Irish and part Cree. He's an outlaw who is campaigning to breach the Hudson Bay Company's monopoly on the fur trade in Canada.
Wait, what year is this supposed to be?
Oh, this is old, man. This is like before I think America is even colonized.
What is good about the show, other than Jason Momoa's body?
It's the acting. It's the storytelling. If you could tell a story about something that happened in 1776 or 1876 or whatever, that's harder to do because history, to some, mm-hmm. is boring.
Yeah. But often when you have something set in a historical time period, it's still reflecting the modern problems.
Listen, the Hudson Bay Company is the oldest company in North America. It's 370-some-odd years old.
So,
and they own everything. Own everything right now.
And we still have monopolies, and we still deal with all this.
They own
concentration.
They own Lord & Taylor. They own Saks Fifth Avenue. And then a bigger subsidiary owns everything.
I don't know why, but I never think of clothing companies as evil, but of course they are.
Oh,
because that's got to come from somewhere.
I think they're the worst.
So are they angry that the show exists?
No. I don't think they're angry at all, but it does show that like this company at one time was very, very prickish. They're coming here. They're taking over this land.
Mm-hmm.
They're chasing out this indigenous people that were here first. They're taking their goods, and then they're selling their goods for an even higher price, and they're cutting them out of
unless
it.
Unless Jason Momoa puts an end to it.
Who is the voice of the little people.
Even though he's such a big person. Is his performance actually good?
Yes, it is. Spoiler alert. In season two, where he is recouping from being badly beaten. And
this is impossible. Who could have beaten him?
He was also hung from the gallows.
Wow.
You have to watch season one.
Okay.
So this Inuit family,
yes.
Grandfather and granddaughter,
mm-hmm.
rescue him because he's on the near death in a canoe.
Okay.
And they pull him into their hut and they nurse him back to health. And the little girl wants to give him this coat. The grandfather says he's not ready for the coat yet. And as he starts to prove himself to the grandfather, he gives him the coat. The grandfather explains that the father was as big in stature as Jason Momoa.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks at her. And he says, so this was your papa's coat. And then she was like, yeah. And then he you know.
My papa was a bear.
So then he looks at the little girl and takes an instant liking to her.
And he eats her because he needs so much protein a day.
Okay, yeah.
Serious question.
Yeah.
When I see things like that, I always think it's anachronistic for someone to look like that. Like when you see like a movie where like
so you're saying
The Rock is a sheriff and it's like – you know, they're not showing the sheriff working out 6 hours a day. Like, how is, in this time period, Momoa look like that?
The only time you've ever seen Declan Harp shirtless was when he was being tortured.
But isn't he, like, giant, though? He's a big dude.
He is a big man.
How do you get, like, do they show him, like...
No, he's not working out at all.
Having protein shakes every 20 minutes?
No, he rarely eats in this.
His Fitbit is like, time for a protein shake.
It's a really good story because here you have this guy who's going to avenge his wife and child's death based on this company that's evil, which is the Hudson Bay Company.
And why are they evil?
One of the heads of the Hudson Bay Company was the guy responsible for the murder of Declan Harp's wife and kid.
Do you watch this show with the sound on?
Yeah, why?
Because I feel like...
I'm just watching and just ogling.
Yeah, right. I feel like you're very shaky on the details.
Listen, it's not the greatest Netflix show. I'm going to put it to you like that.
Look, you know, if you watch it with the sound off, I'm okay with
listen,
that.
Listen, there's a lot of inconsistency and plot holes, and sometimes episodes go nowhere.
Yeah.
But the action sequences are badass.
So what do you see in action sequences, though?
You see somebody's head get stomped in.
So, oh, is it, like, brutal?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out. How many episodes are in season one?
It's only 12. Six and six.
Oh, six. Okay.
Yeah, you can do this in a day.
I'll give it one ep.
What are you obsessed with?
Well, I'm obsessed with a movie that came out 2 years ago, and it was a big hit. Dope.
It's a good movie.
You've seen it?
Yeah.
Dope was directed by, his name is Rick Famuyiwa. I teach film somewhere, and I show it in my film class. So I show it in class, so I've seen it a lot of times now.
You know who produced Dope?
Who?
Forrest Whitaker.
He's also the narrator. It's just so rich in its detail. It's so layered. Its music is great. Its visual style is great. The way that it weaves the music into the editing is amazing. Sometimes, you know, a good soundtrack can feel like it's laid on top of a movie, where with Dope, it's part of the texture of it in a way that feels integral. Zoe Kravitz is great.
All the kids in it are great.
Yeah. I like the whole story of it, where you've got this main character, Malcolm. He has a problem with how other people want to identify him. And that gives him a problem with his sort of self-identification, because he lives in this predominantly African-American neighborhood. The outside world has their own ideas about that. Like when he is talking to his guidance counselor.
Because he wants to go to Harvard.
About going to Harvard. The guidance counselor basically says, in your essay, basically play up that you come from a bad background, which he doesn't want to do. But then within his world, he doesn't really fit because he's a geek. And he likes, quote, what they call white shit. So it's like the outside world sees him as a stereotype of dangerous African-American man. The people in his world see him as this geek. So it's like he doesn't fit anywhere. Everyone wants to stereotype him. And he just wants to do his music and just be with Zoe Kravitz. And it's a great – if you haven't seen it, I mean, just a short rundown of the plot is the lead character, Malcolm, he's a geek and he lives in the Bottoms. And
which is Inglewood, California.
Yeah, yeah. He sort of gets befriended by a local drug dealer who invites him to his birthday party. And Malcolm goes because all the cool kids are going to be there, including Zoe Kravitz, who's the girl he has a crush on. So he goes and there's a drug deal going on and the police come and raid the place. And you have that old-fashioned movie thing where you pick up the wrong bag. So his bag that had his homework in it, he leaves that and accidentally picks up an identical bag that has a bunch of Molly in it. And now the drug dealer who invited him to the party, he's in jail, and everyone wants that Molly, and the main connect who actually, you know, is above the drug dealer friend, he wants the money for it. So it's these geeky kids, and what are they going to do with this Molly? Are they going to sell it? How are they going to handle this problem? And it's awesome. It ends with the Humpty Dance over the credits, and there's like a pop-up video. If you remember the 90s, there's a pop-up video where fun facts would pop up on the screen
like
over
the
video.
Ending.
I was actually talking about this in class the other day. Is Zoe Kravitz ever bad, though?
No. Lenny Kravitz and Lisa Bonet were married.
Yes.
And they had a baby.
Yes. Two beautiful people create another beautiful person.
A goddess.
Yeah.
If you will. Kravitz and Bonet split up.
Mm-hmm.
Her stepdad is Jason Momoa, and Jason Momoa stars in Frontier.
Jason Momoa
and Lisa Bonet are an item, and they're married.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I think that's where we go out on. All right, animal. Let's go bye-bye.
Go bye-bye.